worry about it. It'll be fine. I'll fix it later. All right. It's good to be here talking to the brains of the outfit. I know how it works, and clerks have to keep judges straight. If there's anybody that's judges in here too, then I can sympathize with you. I'll be one as well. But I know where the rubber meets the road, and it is good to be talking to clerks. And plus, just between you and me, clerks are easier to teach than judges. I'm not sure exactly why. The judges, in my opinion, it's a little bit like the old Captain Picard from the Star Trek Next Generation, where they would come in and tell him the problem, and then they'd tell him several solutions, and he'd say, make it so. And that's pretty much what a judge does, make it so. And it's up to the clerk to do that. And I know how that works. I'm going to start you off today with two words that come back maybe from high school or college, which you probably hated then: pop quiz. Let's start with a pop quiz. What I'd like you to do is to take, these are good pieces of paper right here. If anybody doesn't have one, I've got a couple extras that are up here. And for those who like the number ahead, it's going to be 5 questions. And do not put your name on it. Anybody need a piece of paper? Everybody got a piece of paper? Okay, good. All right, we're going to jump right to the first question. Deferred disposition is the same thing as deferred adjudication. And I made them yes or no because I confuse the heck out of myself when I ask true or false questions, because I'll put double negatives and this and that, and I never can figure out, is it supposed to be true or false, even though I know the answer. So, yes or no, is deferred disposition the same thing as deferred adjudication? Question number 2. The special expense fee for a deferred disposition must be collected at the beginning of a deferred period. Is that yes or no? The special expense fee for a deferred disposition must be collected at the beginning of a deferred period. Yes or no? Please do write down your answers. Don't put your name on the top. Question number 3. If a person under 25 years of age does deferred disposition for a moving traffic violation, they are required by law to complete a driver's safety course as part of the deferred disposition. Yes or no? Question number 4. Holders of a commercial driver's license cannot do deferred disposition for any offense. Holders of a commercial driver's license cannot do deferred disposition for any offense. And again, yes or no. Could have been just as easy to do true or false, but I don't want to confuse myself. Question number 5. A basic motorcycle operator's course may be taken instead of a driver's safety course for dismissal of a qualified traffic violation. Yes or no? Okay, so you should have 5 yeses or noes, a combination thereof. I want you to take your piece of paper and wad it up in a ball. And I want you to exchange it by, you can throw it, toss it, somebody else. And I'll go around and pick up the ones that hit the floor. There's one. Who needs one? I got one right here. Good catch. Okay. Have any more, anybody see any more on the floor? Oh, there goes one. All right, so now we're going to go back and we're going to answer these. You can answer off of the page that you have. You don't know whose page it is, so there's no reason not to answer. If they're wrong, all you have to do is just go, hey, it's this paper, it's not me. I knew the answer. Okay, deferred disposition is the same thing as deferred adjudication. What does your paper say, yes or no? We have some yeses, we have some noes. They are different. We don't, in municipal courts, JP courts, we don't use deferred adjudication. We use deferred disposition. Deferred adjudication has a little bit, some subtle differences under Chapter 42 that it's used, they're used in Class A, B, and felony cases. Question number two, the special expense fee for a deferred disposition may be collected at the beginning of a deferred period. Must be collected. Yes or no? And the answer is, and everybody, anybody have any yeses on their paper? Got a few yeses, all right. Well, the answer is no. It can be collected any time during the deferred, at the end of the deferred, at the beginning of the deferred. Question number three. If a person under 25 years of age does deferred disposition for moving traffic violation, they are required by law to complete a driver's safety course as part of the deferred disposition. Is that a yes or a no? Got some yeses, got some no's. Let me ask this question a little different way. This is like Vegas. Nothing's going to go, you know, I'm not going to hold anything against you. When you leave, it's all staying here. How many of you require, your courts require, that someone under 25, when they're doing deferred disposition on a moving traffic violation, requires them to do the driver safety course as part of that deferred? How many of you require that? So there are some that don't. By law, you should be requiring that. If they're doing a deferred disposition, if they're under 25 and it's a moving traffic violation, they should be doing a driver safety course as part of that deferred disposition. Question number four. Holders of a commercial driver's license cannot do deferred disposition for any offense. Yes or no? How many of you have yeses on your paper? Okay, how many have no's on your paper? That should be everybody else. Anybody want to write down, it depends? That's a trick question, right? It is. Yeah, I got to throw in at least one trick question. It depends on the offense, doesn't it? It does depend on the offense. If you've got somebody with a CDL who comes in for a simple assault case and you routinely do deferred disposition for simple assault cases and he otherwise qualifies, having that CDL doesn't make a difference. That's a trick question. Let's make it a little closer, and we'll get to this and we'll talk about this. What if they come in for a fail to maintain financial responsibility charge? Do I have to answer now? We'll get to that in a little while. Question number five, a basic motorcycle operator's course may be taken instead of a driver's safety course for dismissal of a qualified traffic violation. How many of you have yes? Just a few yeses? So everybody else have no? Or just tired of raising your hand? Okay. Yo, I like that. That's that it depends. But this one really doesn't, and it may depend because on how you read the law. I would say yes. I would go with a yes, but there's a way to read it and say that it's only if it's a motorcycle violation. But the way the law is written, I think you could go either way. I think you could actually get a violation in a car and still do a motorcycle safety course. It's on how you read the law. Yes, ma'am. Okay, let's do it. What if they have? Okay, the question is if you have someone under 25 who comes in with a moving traffic violation and they're doing deferred disposition. And part of that deferred disposition, since they're under 25 and it is a moving traffic violation, is that they are supposed to do a driver safety course. How do you handle that when they're from out of state? Well, it does make it difficult. So you can go back to a couple of options. You could say, well, since you're from that state, if you want to go ahead and take a course back in your state that's comparable, then we'll allow that. And I don't think you're... And you may be technically non-complying with the law, because I'm pretty sure it says a Texas license. You could simply tell them, I'm sorry, you're not eligible to do a deferred disposition. Or you could kind of make up your own law and say, well, since you're not from Texas, you're not required to do this, so we're going to go ahead and do deferred disposition and not require you to do a driver safety course. I probably know judges who have done all three of those things. It does. There is a qualifier, though. If they're military, you've got an out. If they're a military family, military personnel, active military, then you've got an out. But as far as just purely from another state under 25, which you may get a lot of at colleges, certainly, then it does raise some good questions. Let's jump on into deferred disposition. And I did not see what y'all have for, looks like y'all have a copy of the slides, which is good. Good place to make notes as we go along here today. Deferred disposition provisions for municipal courts under Article 45.051, the Code of Criminal Procedure. Deferred disposition is always discretionary with the court. There's never a time where a judge is required to give deferred disposition. Sometimes when I say that, I get a little bit of argument, but we'll get to a couple of points where it seems like you're required, but you're a judge is really not. So it's always discretionary with the court. That part's not really controversial to most of the people at the court. The part that's controversial, particularly for prosecutors, is that after a plea of guilty or no contest, or a finding of guilt after trial, a judge can still give deferred disposition. Prosecutors don't necessarily like that. You could go through a jury trial, and let's say it's a particularly long one in municipal court, 2 days, 2-day jury trial. You get through it, and the judge says, I really feel bad after that guilty finding. There were just enough circumstances there. I feel sorry for the defendant. I'm going to go ahead and set him up on a deferred disposition. Prosecutor going to be happy with that? Probably not. Judge can do that. It's not the prosecutor's call. It's the judge's call. Now, how many of you have... Yes, ma'am. Okay, so it's not really a question, it's a statement that there's really no such thing as a pretrial or as a deferred disposition. They call it a pretrial diversion. I guess I would have to argue if that's the position, because deferred disposition is specifically set out under 45.051. A pretrial diversion is different. Pretrial diversion is typically if you do something, then the state's not going to proceed with the charge. They'll just recommend it for dismissal. No fees, no specific writing. It's just, if you do, an example of a pretrial diversion I've heard of is some cities have, if you have an animal charge relating to animal, they'll have a class that you can go through at their animal control office. And it doesn't fit within any parameters of a deferred disposition. They'll just say, look, you go through, complete that class, bring back your certificate. We're going to go ahead and set it for another pretrial. You show that certificate, then we'll go to the state, and this is the state talking, the prosecutor. We'll go ahead and we'll make a recommendation to dismiss that case. That's what a pretrial diversion is. And I forgot to mention, I want this to be a discussion. Discussions are much, much better and a lot more fun for me, too, than me just standing up here talking. You're going to get tired of me talking after an hour and 10 minutes or so. So please, if you have question or discussion, let's discuss. You do have to pay the court costs for deferred disposition, but it can be paid at the time of the order in installments, by community service, or any combination thereof. Interesting side note to, I know we're at a legislative session, in a special session of a legislative year, and we're going to have some new laws, and quite frankly, I have not seen any new laws that affect deferred disposition or driver safety course yet. There were a couple of bills that did not pass, but you can never say never when a legislative session is going on, because things will get tacked on to a bill that have nothing to do with them. So there may be, come September, I taught this course and told you this, you may see me in September, and we may have some major change with deferred disposition and driver safety course. You're going to say, you told us there wasn't a change. I don't know of any right now. That's my version, and I'm sticking with it. But a few years ago, I was teaching a similar course to judges. And part of the course, I was talking about the fact that deferred disposition really is a dismissal option for those who have some money, because you have to have money to pay the fees involved. So the judge raised her hand and she said, well, what about doing community service for it? I said, well, there's no specific provision under the law that allows you to order community service and have that as part of a deferred disposition. I also said, if you choose to do that, then nobody's probably going to call you on it, but it's not specifically set out under statute. Turns out her husband was a state legislator. And the next legislative session, they added the ability to pay deferred fees through community service. So I never know who my audience is. If any of y'all have some issues with some of the deferred and you want to get them changed and you have that ability, then go right ahead. Okay. It could be both, either in both. You can. And the court can defer the case for up to 180 days. I've seen deferrals that go longer than that. That's really the only jurisdiction that the court has, is to go up to 180 days. That special expense fee is authorized under Article 45.051A and can collect it prior to the end of the deferral time. Prior to 2009, there was no statutory authority to collect it prior to the end of the deferred period. So what did courts do back then? A lot of times you had to post a bond. Courts would require that defendant post a bond, court would hold that bond, and then at the end of the time, it would be converted to pay the special expense fee. But after 2009, you can make it, you can require that it be paid up front. And the judge may elect not to impose the special expense fee for good cause shown by the defendant. This relates back to maybe doing community service for it, or there may be some situations where a person, because of health or other critical reasons, may not be able even to do community service, and the judge can. It's basically like saying, all right, we're going to set you up as a deferred disposition, and you're not going to be paying anything. Pretty rare. I can probably count on two fingers how many times I've done that. But it can certainly happen. And it is legal to happen. If the defendant violates the terms of the deferred disposition and the judge orders collection of that special expense fee, it must go toward payment of the fine imposed by the judge. That's also a change that was made in response to some cities, and I'm sure none of you were doing this, that were actually double dipping. They would keep the special expense fee that was paid, and then they would impose the fine. So basically someone's paying twice what the maximum was. And by law now, you can't do that. Deferred can be used for all fine-only offenses except offenses committed in a construction maintenance work zone when workers are present. If there's a violation in that work zone, then still got to be workers present. Which I see a lot of work zones, and I don't see so many workers present. I don't know what the deal is with that. Maybe it's just the time I travel, but it seems like I travel all during the day. All right. DUI and consumption with two convictions can't do deferred disposition. And there is an exception, well, not to DUI, but for minor in possession consumption, there's an exception. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Holders of CDL, and we could even say helders of CDL, because if you had a CDL at the time of the violation, and you got rid of it, you still would not be eligible to do a deferred disposition. If it's a state law or city ordinance violation relating to motor vehicle control, excludes parking violations. But let me go back to motor vehicle control. Somebody want to throw out a definition of what you think motor vehicle control might be? Speeding? Okay. How about a definition of motor vehicle control? Driving a vehicle. Okay. I like that. Can you think of a violation where you're driving a vehicle that still might not relate to motor vehicle control? No valid license. Good point. Here's one we had a debate with in our court for a while. How about using a cell phone in a school zone? Or when the law gets passed in September, using a cell phone for texting or receiving a text. Is that motor vehicle control? Well, we had a prosecutor who thought, no. I think it's absolutely motor vehicle control. It impairs, and studies have shown, up to 26 times impairs your ability to operate that vehicle. You're 26 times worse when you're texting. So that could be motor vehicle control. I've heard another term thrown out, moving traffic violation. It may even, motor vehicle control, I believe, goes further than a moving traffic violation. So it gives your court some discretion, certainly, as to what you determine motor vehicle control is. Parking violation is pretty straightforward. But let's go to insurance. How many of you allow, or your courts allow, a commercial driver's license holder who has a insurance violation to do deferred disposition? Got a few? Okay. It doesn't involve motor vehicle control, does it? I don't think so. I think, and it's not what I think that I'm concerned with here today. It's what you think. But anybody have a good argument for or against why? Yes, ma'am. Okay, the statement here is that it's more of a paper violation, like inspection and registration, where they didn't have a particular piece of paper or something they were required to have, and it doesn't involve motor vehicle control. I think that's a pretty good analogy. It is serious. I think all of us would agree that not having insurance and driving motor vehicle and the risk that involves is serious. But it is a little different than a moving traffic violation or motor vehicle control. So if you do, and again, it's probably up to your court to make that decision. I don't think it's wrong either way you go. Somebody might have a pretty good argument if they wanted to argue, well, I've got a CDL and I got this insurance violation, and you allow everybody else to do deferred if they qualify, if there wasn't an accident and I've now got my insurance and so forth. So I believe I should be entitled to as well. I think they've got a pretty decent argument. Conditions that the judge may order. They may require the defendant to post a bond and amount of the fine to secure payment of the fine. That's pretty much gone by the wayside since we can require the special expense fee up front now. This is a condition I think is highly underutilized. The court can require the defendant to pay restitution to a victim. Okay, yes, you've got your fine over here, or your special expense fee. It's going to be $200. You did damages to this person. Let's say it's a reckless damage charge. You did damages to this person's car. And it's just a long scratch, but it's going to cost them $175 to get that fixed. And I'm going to require that as restitution, you pay that $175 as well. That's part of your deferred disposition. J- judge can do that as long as it does not exceed the fine amount, the maximum fine amount. Professional counseling. This is also highly underutilized, but boy, there are a lot of people I'd like to send to counseling. And it can be ordered by the court, and you can make them pay the fee for it. The court's not having to pay the fee. You can make them pay the fee for it. Diagnostic testing for alcohol or drugs. And if it's an alcohol or drug violation that they're in your court for, that's perfectly fine. If it's not an alcohol or drug violation, it may create a problem, and we'll talk about that problem in just a couple of minutes. Psychosocial assessment. I can barely say it. I'm not sure I can tell you what it is. Ryan had a great definition. He was teaching in a different class recently and had a great definition of what a psychosocial assessment is. But it's basically an assessment to find out if there's something wrong with you and what help you might need. And it's not as convoluted as it sounds like. Can require someone to participate in alcohol and drug abuse treatment or education program. And again, we're not talking about just a juvenile or a minor where this might be one of the required conditions. This is a condition that the court could put on anyone if they felt it was related to the offense. And goes back to, you can make them pay for all these different classes or the assessment that you're asking to be done, then the defendant will have to pay for that as part of the deferred disposition. You can require them to do a driver safety course as part of a deferred disposition, even if they're not under 25. If it's a moving traffic violation, and arguably even if it's not a moving traffic violation, you could require a driving safety course. It's all going to come back to a term I'm going to talk about in just a couple of minutes. Present evidence of compliance. You require them to do these things, then the court wants to see proof that they actually did them. If it's a certificate, if it's a receipt, whatever the case may be, put that in as a requirement, because otherwise a deferred order is a legal document. And if it's not in that legal document, I think a court's in a very weak position to say, oh, well, even though I didn't say you had to bring back proof, that's just inherent in reading it. That's obvious. How else would I be able to know that you did it if I didn't put it in there? Well, that's not a very good legal argument. The court should have the requirements in there, even the requirements about bringing back proof. Any reasonable condition. This is a blank check that the court has. Talked about some specifics, but any reasonable condition. Here's your blank check, judge. Write this check for whatever you believe that defendant needs. The one catch with any reasonable condition and all those other conditions is they have to be related somehow to the offense. The judge will have to be able to say, okay, this was a possession of drug paraphernalia case, so I'm going to require that you get tested for drug use for the next 3 months, once a month for the next 3 months. It can't be, well, this was a fighting in school case with no allegations of any type of drug use or alcohol use. I'm going to make you get tested for the next 3 months for alcohol or drug use. It's got to be related. Somehow the judge can tie it in. But still, any reasonable, very powerful, any reasonable condition. All right, I want you to, again, take out one of your lovely pieces of paper. I'm not going to make you throw them at each other this time. But I am going to give you a couple of minutes to be the judge. You have a 20-year-old in front of you, Johnny. Johnny could be girl or boy, except I kept saying he, so it's going to be a him. This is his second MIP alcohol charge in the last year. You want to comply with the law, but you want to make an impact on Johnny. You think he's headed for bigger and worse things. What requirements do you put on him if you allow a deferred disposition? So I want you to take a couple of minutes and to write down what you would require Johnny to do. You are going to go ahead and give him a deferred disposition. But you can be as creative as you want to be. As long as you remember, it's got to be reasonably related to the offense. All right, if you want to start finishing it up. And I'm not going to make anyone share. I'm going to do the exact opposite of law school. In law school, what happens if the professors start telling you that he's going to call in the class in a couple of minutes and you knew you weren't prepared, you did anything you could not to look at him. You'd look down. And so what he would do is look around for who wasn't making eye contact. All right. And so I got called on a lot. So I'm going to let anybody volunteer. And y'all are clerks. Y'all are used to talking and speaking up, right? So anybody like to volunteer? Yes, ma'am. Wow, okay. She's going to require the class, and that's one of the requirements that this person would have. He would have to do the 8-hour alcohol awareness class, because she's going to require that he go to testing and require that he go to alcohol anonymous classes. Very good. I like that. Someone else? Yes, ma'am. Yes, I forgot that. We got required community service, right? Oh, I like that. Okay, we're going to have an essay, right? We're going to have to do an essay and going to have to talk to other teens. That's powerful, because one thing teens hate to do is get up and talk in front of other teens, particularly if they screwed up. And yes, sir, in the back. Yeah. Okay. All right. Tough judge. He's also going to require driver's license suspension. Okay, anybody have something really different? Yes. I like that. She's going to require that he do a report on the number of alcohol-related deaths of people under the age of 20, and that would be an eye-opener, because the number one cause of death for 16 to 25-year-old are car crashes, and out of those car crashes, quite a few of those involve alcohol or drug use. Anybody else have something really different they wanted to share? Yes, ma'am. Very good. The community service would be related to the consequences of alcohol use. And that's really what our legislature put in place back when they made the requirements for doing community service for alcohol-related violations for minors. But what we found was it's difficult to come up with those types of locations. The deal is great, and that's what they ought to have to do. It's just fairly difficult to come up with locations where that. All right, thank you all for participating. Just for a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about mandatory driver safety course as part of a deferred disposition. This was one of the questions at the beginning. It only applies to traffic offenses that are moving violations. There's very little wiggle room there, but there's a little bit, and it applies to defendants that are under 25 years of age. Here is one of the requirements that I'm not even going to ask you, because I would have to raise my hand at a point I don't want to raise my hand. But Provisional driver's license holders are required to be re-examined for a driver's license if you allow them to do driver's state or a deferred disposition. And to, when they do that, they have to pay a $10 fee to DPS. All alcohol offenses, including public intoxication. Now, under 21, alcohol awareness course is required. Community service is required, except for driving under the influence. And the first offense is 8 to 12 hours, and the second offense is 20 to 40 hours. Don't quote me on this next part because I would not make this argument, but I do think there's a little bit of a legal argument that if you put someone on, if you put a minor on deferred disposition, you may not have to comply with those two requirements. That's not a good argument. That's not the argument that you want to go by because there's no reason why you wouldn't want them to do this. For a third offense, really, there shouldn't be any jurisdiction in the court, in the municipal court for a third offense. Realistically, we probably get third offenses quite a bit. What are the problems with that? One, depending on the type of computer system you use or system you use, you may not know. The officer may not know, and you may not know that it's a minor's third offense. So that's the first problem. The second problem is if you have a busy county court or a juvenile court, they don't want those cases anyway and aren't going to take those cases. So most of the time, we may have kids that have multiple. Yes, ma'am. That is a great question. Who files the second, or who files it as a second charge? Well, there's actually no different charge. It's the same charge, but you have to, for some purposes, yes, you have to know it's the second charge. So whose responsibility is? I don't know that it's anyone's responsibility. Well, let me rephrase that. I don't think it's the clerk's responsibility. It really should be the prosecutor's responsibility. In reality, it's the clerks that are probably going to be the ones who are going to be looking through, whether it's computer-wise or paper-wise, and say, hey, this person has, this is their second violation or this is their third violation. Depending on how your court works and how your judge thinks it ought to work, you could let the prosecutor know. They can start working with it as a second violation. They could even put a note on it. The ticket's going to be the same, right? The ticket or the citation the individual gets is not probably going to look different. If the officer really happens to know this person and knows it's their second violation, may even write second violation on the citation, but it's still going to be the same charge and the same citation. The charging instrument or the complaint, if it were filed, could allege, and probably should allege if you're going to enhance it, that it's a second violation. But the real point is that the requirements for a deferred disposition elevate a little bit if you know. So you're not formally in there saying, reading the formal charge and saying, how do you want to plead and all this kind of stuff. Necessarily, you're saying, hey, this is your charge. You have a right to plead not guilty, guilty or no contest. And I see that it's a second offense. So if you plead no contest or guilty, then you are going to have to do 20 to 30 hours of community service, 20 to 40 hours of community service, so forth. So however you can get it done. So the question is, right, so the question is for that enhancement to a higher charge, to a higher court, how does that get known? Any way that it can. If the officer calls, well, see, if the officer calls and asks and you say this is their third or fourth offense, then he shouldn't give a citation, he shouldn't bring them to your court or your jail, they should go directly over to the county. If the prosecutor, it comes to the prosecutor's attention maybe later in the case, and the prosecutor gets involved and says, oh, this is his fourth charge, then he can, depending on the relationship between the DA and the city attorney, he can get in touch with the DA and say, hey, would you accept this charge and file this as a Class B? So any way that it can get done. Oh, that's a question I'm not qualified to answer. I think it's ever taken. Well, let me throw that out to other clerks because y'all are the best people to answer that question. Do you believe that it's ethical to bring that to the prosecutor or the police officer's attention? You are the holders of records, and you have information on those records. Let me ask, if a defense attorney asked you for that same information, would you give it to him? I'd say if you're going to give it to either side, then it's not an ethical problem. Okay. Okay, the question is, back to the provisional driver's license holders that are required to be re-examined if you give them a deferred disposition for a moving traffic violation, what if they fail that re-examination? Oddly enough, the law doesn't require that they pass the re-examination, just that they be re-examined. The intent, surely, was that they pass it. If a deferred disposition is completed successfully, it's dismissed. It may not be used against a person for any purpose. Yeah, right. Alcohol offenses by minors are still convictions for enhancement purposes, even when they're dismissed. To me, that's the law's just saying the opposite thing there, but they're still usable. What if it's been expunged? That's a great question, too. Now, they have to be over 21 for it to be expunged. So if it's been if they're old enough to have it expunged, then they're old enough for it no longer to be a minor and to have that type of charge. It's a good question, though. It's a little bit of a trick answer, but they wouldn't be able to get that charge once they're able to have it expunged. You must have a show cause hearing if a person fails to comply with deferred disposition terms. This is a relatively new law as well. We've had it for driver safety course failure for quite a few years, but for deferred disposition, it's 2007, 2009, somewhere around there. And there was a bill this session to try to get that requirement removed, and it did not go very far, but I suspect that it will be refiled next time. I think if they limited the bill to deferred disposition, it probably would get better traction, but it was also for driver safety course, and I don't think that's going to get very good traction. To have that show, for that show cause, you have to give notice in writing. You have to give an additional period. You don't have to give an additional period, but the judge may give an additional period to complete or comply with the terms. If the person is 25 or over, the court may impose the judgment or reduce the fine. So even if it says, okay, this is going to be $225 if you fail to complete it, the judge could listen to what happened at the show cause, say, okay, I feel really bad, I'm going to go ahead and reduce it down to $100 and just pay that and it'll be done. Yes, it will go on your record, but it's only going to be $100. But if you're under 25, the court must impose the fine. Don't ask me. I just report the law. Defendant pays fine or may appeal. Now, that's how many of you are from non-record courts? So we've got quite a few record courts then. Uh-oh, I have some indifference. Okay. If you are from a non-record court, then this... there we go. This is what... oh, no. Thing doesn't work most of the time, and then when you don't want it to work, it works. Wow, I shot through a bunch of them really fast there. Okay. Defendant pays fine or may appeal. That is a non-record court. You want to make sure and distinguish that. If it is a record court, they are done. There is no appeal. which I really like being a record court. It just irks me that people can go through all the motions and then can still appeal. Reports to DPS may not report traffic offenses as long as they completed all the terms of deferred dispositions, but you must report all alcoholic beverage code offenses and use form DIC-15. Yes, sir. That's a good question. I don't know how that mechanically works. Probably the rest of you could answer that. I know that the traffic accident will show up on a record, but it will not show that the person is the cause of the accident. I'm just not sure how that gets to their record. I don't know the answer to why either, other than, I don't have an answer for why. If you're not at fault, why should it show up on your record? But it does. Right, but that shouldn't be held against you. And your insurance is really not supposed to hold that against you. If you're involved in an accident, it's not your fault. They're not supposed to hold that against you. Now, we all know insurance companies don't always do what they're supposed to do. But, yes, it does get reported on your record if you have an accident, even if it's not your fault, or even if you do a deferred disposition on the charge and it's dismissed, then it still goes on your record. The accident part, the citation does not. Okay, moving to driver safety course and motorcycle operator course. Won't spend a lot of time on motorcycle operator course. Just know that it's basically interchangeable whenever I say driver safety course. But if anybody's ever done the motorcycle safety course, it is nothing like a driver safety course. A motorcycle operator course, first of all, is expensive. It's about $195. I think that the minimum is $190. And it's 16 hours long. It's 2 days on a weekend. But it's great. They provide a motorcycle, you do hands-on experience, and once you complete it, it also lets you get your motorcycle's endorsement on your driver's license. That's pretty much most of what I'm going to say about motorcycle operator course. There is mandatory driver safety course, and there is a discretionary driver safety course. The mandatory one is the one that we are most familiar with. And so we'll talk about that first. When it says mandatory, it really means it's mandatory on the court or the judge. If a person is charged with an eligible offense and they make a timely election and they meet other statutory requirements, then it is mandatory on the court to give them. It is their right to do a driver safety course. But let's check the first, the offenses it applies to. Any offense that's a moving traffic violation that's within the jurisdiction of the Municipal or Justice Court, involves operation of motor vehicle, defined as disobeying warning signs and barricades, rules of road violations, and juveniles are kicked into that same category by Section 729.001 of the Transportation Code. Some offenses you can't do a driver safety course for. If you're speeding more than 25 miles per hour over the limit or over 95. Anybody know why that over 95 is there? Y'all should know this in West Texas. You can go 80 on I-10. That's exactly right. So before that little tweak was made in the law, if you were going 104 on I-10, you could still do a driver safety course if you qualified otherwise. And they thought, that's a little bit much. Let's kick it down to 95. I drove my Jeep out here, and I could barely 70 most of the time on the highway, so I don't have to worry about it. Passing a school bus, you are not eligible. Hit and run offenses, you are not eligible. Serious traffic violations, that's for commercial motor vehicles. There's a whole bunch of them, but speeding more than 15 miles per hour over the speed limit, a variety of other ones are considered serious traffic violations. Construction zone violations any violation of construction zone while workers are present, except for seatbelt, and inspection offenses. Any offense committed by CDL holders or helders could not do driver's safety course. What is a timely election before the answer date? Whatever you put on as your answer date before that is timely. Mailbox rule does apply. If it's mailed on or before the answer date, must be received within 10 days of answer date. Keep your envelope in case there becomes a question about, or keep their envelope in case there becomes a question on that. And legible postmark is evidence of receipt. Let me see if I've got a point here. Let me go back in case I don't have this point other places. Somebody asked a question. I know I have it later. I'll come back to it. What constitutes an election? In person. They show up in the court and say, I want to do a driver safety course. That one's easy. That's obvious. Through their attorney, he wants to do a driver, or she wants to do a driver safety course. By certified mail, this is the one I was going to ask you about. Does it have to be certified mail? It does. The law says it has to be certified mail for them to exercise their right. Do you have to require it to be certified mail? No. You could say, okay, if they make their election and they send in a letter, we don't care if it's certified. We're going to let them do it. But if you wanted to be a stickler for it, you could say, no, you didn't send it by certified mail. You have no right to do the driver safety course. That's being a little bit of a jerk. Who qualifies if they have their proof of financial responsibility, a Texas driver's license, or if they don't have a Texas driver's license but they are active military and their wife or kids or husband and kids can also qualify. But if they are military, they can't have done a driver's safety course or a motorcycle operator's course in any state in the last 12 months prior to the date of the offense. Well, how do you measure that? We'll get to it in a minute somewhere in the slides, but basically you get an affidavit saying, I haven't done driver safety course in any other state. Now we get to, yes, ma'am. Oh, that's a good question. Who has to have financial responsibility? Is it the person exactly, or is it the car, or is it the that's a 4DC. The legal answer is it doesn't really say. And there is a provision which leads me to believe if there's some proof that someone has insurance that would cover the car, that would work for that. Not for driving, but just for taking the driver safety course, which seems kind of contrary. But that's up to your courts as well. We have that discussion in our court fairly often because it says evidence of financial responsibility. They're going to take a course. They're not driving a vehicle during that time. So whatever your court accepts, I think is going to be fine. Discretionary driver safety course. I'm amazed by how many people, including myself a few years ago, did not know that there actually was a discretionary driver safety course. But a judge or court may grant driver safety course to a defendant even if the defendant does not qualify under those other circumstances, even if they don't have a right to do it, even if they took the course within the last 12 months, the judge can allow them to do a driver safety course. It's under 45.0511D. And 45.051. How might it not be how might they not qualify for their right? Well, one might be that silly thing with a certified letter. And I won't say silly because it is the law. But maybe they just send it in by regular mail and your court's a real stickler for, hey, it's got to be certified mail, so they don't have a right anymore to do the driver safety course. Okay? Well, the judge could still allow it and say, well, okay, yeah, they didn't send it by certified. We'll go ahead and allow it under discretionary driver safety course. Or if they didn't make the request timely. Otherwise, okay, well, then we'll do it as a discretionary driver safety course. For mandatory, their right to do a driver safety course, it's no more than the $10 fee that you all are familiar with, plus whatever the court costs are. For discretionary, the special expense fee can be up to the fine plus the court cost, up to the highest amount, the maximum fine plus the court cost. So it's going to be allowed by the judge, but it can be expensive for the defendant to do it under this provision. Yes, ma'am. No, it would be separate. If you wanted to max it out, you could max them out. That's correct. No refunds if the course is taken or not taken. There are two provisions under the Transportation Code that allow for special driver safety course for seatbelt violations. Not all seatbelt violations, but those that involve children or not buckling up children. It is a driver safety course that is still 6 hours, and 4 hours involves encouraging the use of child seats and seat belts. Somebody tell me why this is almost a non-factor now. Because of that silly defense, I shouldn't be commenting on the laws like that. Because on that wonderful defense under the seat belt law that allows a person to have a child safety or seat belt violation dismissed if they present proof that they have a child safety seat. I want to give you a worse, and this is a horrible example, and it's meant to be horrible to make a point. You could have a child killed in an accident. Killed in an accident. Not buckled in. Okay? And if the parent got they look at everything, okay, it wasn't the parent's fault, the accident wasn't their fault, but they didn't have them buckled in, they get a ticket for not having the child secured. They could take that ticket and have it dismissed if they present proof that they've got a child safety seat. That's an example because most likely the parent would be prosecuted for child endangerment or some higher offense, but could happen. Citation must have this wonderful notice on it, which you are probably all very familiar with. You may be able to require that this charge be dismissed by successfully completing a driver safety course or a motorcycle operator training course. You will lose that right if, on or before your appearance date, you do not provide the court with a notice of your request to take the course. It's got to be on there in prominent letters. If you don't put that notice on there, what does it do? Mandatory driver safety course, meaning their right to take the driver safety course, extends until you do give them that notice. So if you never give them that notice, you can't do anything else with that citation. And if, God forbid, you issue a warrant on it, because you're going to be in trouble, possibly. Yes, sir? It has to be written, and it has to be written on the citation, and I'm trying to remember if this is the one, I believe this is the one that has to be in the largest writing on the citation. That may not be right. But it's got to be in prominent, at the very least, it's got to be prominently written on the citation. How is a DSC or a driver safety course processed? The court enters a judgment when the plea is made, originally. They collect the cost, defers the judgment for 90 days to give the person time to complete the deferred disposition, get a copy of their driving record from DPS. There is such a thing as that valet driver safety course where basically, DPS sends the court proof of completion of the driver's safety course, or excuse me, proof of the driving record. And the last one is the affidavit of eligibility for the military personnel, just stating that they have not taken a driver's safety course in any other state during the previous 12 months. On proof of completion, once the court gets those items, then the court removes the judgment. They report to DPS the date of completing all the requirements. And we all know now, of course, that the driver safety course certificates are no longer uniform. They used to all be one easy-to-read form. Now they could be a variety of forms. Not really a problem with that I've seen, except there are a couple of places that the classes are not accepted as driver safety course completion classes. AARP is one, and there's one other one. I can't remember. Court may only dismiss one charge for each completion. Little caveat there, though, is I do know lots of courts that will remain nameless, Arlington, that, and I know some other courts do this too, that if a person comes in and you're willing to, they have two violations, and they're going to do deferred on one and a driver safety course on another one, which might be really some good hardship reason why they should be able to do that, then we will accept the certificate for the driver safety course and then also consider that as completion for the one under deferred. I don't really recommend that. I'm not quite sure why we do it, but we do. If they don't comply with the terms of the driver safety course, you do have to have that show cause. You do have to notify the defendant in writing of that show cause hearing and of that they failed to comply, the time of the hearing, the place of the hearing, the obvious things. And you've got to require them to appear. If they don't appear, do you issue contempt? Probably not. You've got some other choices that are better than contempt. I would stay away from the contempt part. If they do appear, the court may go ahead and impose the judgment on the underlying charge or give an extension of time to comply. Defendant may pay the fine or appeal in a non-record court. In a record court, again, they're done. They don't get the chance to appeal that if they didn't complete everything. If they fail to appear, these are better options than contempt of court, in my opinion. You can go ahead and impose the judgment underlying charge, require immediate payment of the outstanding fine amount, and can issue a capious profine warrant for their arrest. You just go ahead and fill out the judgment and say, hey, it's due now. And then since they haven't paid it now, then you go ahead and issue the warrant. If you have questions, comments, or concerns, I'll be happy to answer those. If you have complaints or criticisms, then refer them to Ryan Turner. And I was told if you get out early today that we'll speed things up, and I'm sorry that I only got out 4 minutes early, but it is 4 minutes that you will have for later. So what do we need to... Thank you.